League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Yes, this is the Inside Edge on Love Sport. These are your latest cricketing headlines with me, James Gray. Australia have thrashed Bangladesh at Trent Bridge earlier today to continue their good form and reconfirm their status as one of the favourites to progress from the group stages and even taking the top spot in the table. The Aussies made a circumspect start to the innings but kept wickets in hand, and Dave Warner at the crease, he made 166 of 147 balls. Aaron Finch and Usman Khawaja also made half centuries as Australia posted 381 for 5. It was always likely to be beyond Bangladesh, who ended up 48 runs short despite a fine unbeaten 100 from wicketkeeper Mushfiqur Rahim. England head to Headingley tomorrow, looking for their fifth win of their own in this competition, with Owen Morgan in fine form. The captain hit a world record 17 sixes in a destructive innings of 148 against Afghanistan to leave his teammates astounded, not least Test captain Joe Root. He made 88 in the same game, as England fell three short of 400, but he did have the best seat in the house for much of Morgan's hitting.
Obviously, Morgs came in and played an unbelievable hand. Some of the cleanest striking you'll get to see, and to be at the end was an absolute delight and pleasure to watch. So I'm really pleased for him, and really good time for him to hit some good form.
England and Sri Lanka will kick off at 10:30 tomorrow. Don't miss our Cricket World Cup show from 10 a.m. with all the latest news from the toss, the teams and much, much more. This is the Inside Edge on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine. We're here every Thursday night until 8 p.m. Tonight I'm joined by the Cricketer's Nick Friend and the fastest man in Sussex when Jofra Archer's on holiday, Tamal Mills. Delighted to have you both in the studio. Tamal, I understand you've been through a lot of rigmarole with moving house this week, but everything's okay now.
Yeah, we're here. It's late on in the week. It's been a tough start to the week, but I'm still here and I'm still able to tell the tale.
If you need to sleep in the studio, it's been done before. It's all right. It's not a problem. As I mentioned, Australia have smashed Bangladesh, quite frankly. The 48 runs, they were never really in the game. David Warner, man of the match. I've been talking about David Warner, and I mentioned this earlier. Is he in that good nick tomorrow?
Well, I think so. He is now, isn't he? What did he score? 100 and what did he get today?
66.
166 today. You don't score 166 runs and if you're not in good nick, I'm afraid. He'd been building throughout the tournament, hadn't he? He'd started off, you know, really scratchy, not looking fluent at all, and you know, it's the old adage, kind of, you know, the class prevails, cream rises to the top, all that good stuff, and you know, it proves if you stick with it. And, you know, you keep calm and you back yourself, eventually you're going to come good, and he certainly did that today.
Do you think these tournaments as well are about sort of easing into them? You know, I mentioned earlier that they're like the Germans. They don't start well, but it's all about just playing yourself into these tournaments. You don't have to be hot from the start, right?
I mean, it's a long, long month and a half, this, isn't it? Like, you're playing 9 games to get out your group, yeah. So you don't want to peak too early. But then
is that a thing? Like, you know, peaking too early? Can you play too much good cricket?
It's a bit of a rubbish cliche, isn't it? But
well, yeah, that's why I pulled you up.
but you don't want to get your... I guess you don't want to play your best game in your first game. Mm. Because if you win that first game and you sort of regress as the tournament goes on, then you're not there in mid-July when it really matters. I mean, it's such a long group that, as we saw with, you know, even with South Africa, you can lose your first three and still sort of have a shot. So it is about getting out of this group. And once you're out of that group and you get into the last four, then really the tournament starts. It's a weird tournament in that in every other sport, you have sort of quite a short group stage. You lose 3 games in a row in the Football World Cup and you're going home. Mm. You lose 3 here, you've got 6 more games. You win those 6, you're into the semi-finals.
Australia now 5 wins, of course, 10 points. Dave Warner equaling Adam Gilchrist's 100th tally today. He says it's a great achievement, but it's just about 2 points and moving forward. You know, Dave Warner, such a mild-mannered chap. Do you buy any of this? He reinvented himself as the Rev, you know, before all the cheating stuff. Do you buy it, or is Dave Warner still the bloke who punched Joe Root in a pub?
Yeah, I've played against Warner. I don't know him as a bloke. I've not had too many dealings with him. You hear some pretty average things, kind of away from the pitch and on the circuit. But yeah, you I think I think overall, yeah, he's right. It's about 2 points, and it is about marching on. Of course, when you're in the middle of a tournament, you're going to be chuffed you've scored 160-odd. Of course, yeah. You are. You're a professional cricketer. You're out there. You want to score your runs and take your wickets and put in these match-winning performances. So, of course, he'll be chuffed to bits that he's, you know, more than contributed to getting his team, 2 points today. And but he's right. It is a long game, as Nick said. You're building towards a tournament. Bangladesh, you know, they played some good cricket today. They scored 300 or 320 did they get in the end?
Yeah.
And, they on another day, scoring 320 is going to win you a game of cricket in the World Cup. So, they'll be really pleased that they obviously had enough to see them off today.
But I wonder how many teams are scared of Australia at the moment. Because, you know, I look at that top order, you know, Finch, Warner, the form Khawaja's been in, Steve Smith, not to mention the likes of Glenn Maxwell. And you should be scared of it, but I don't know, as a bowler looking around at Dave Warner getting 50 off 80 against India, and all right, he got 160 today, but he's not been doing what Dave Warner, we always knew him to do. I mean, is this a different... Has he sort of just changed the way he plays, maybe?
What I'll say is, I thought... I mean, he spoke very honestly after his 100 against Pakistan about the way he played against India, and he said he wasn't at his best, and I guess it's that thing where once you face 60 balls and you're 35 not out, you've sort of got that decision to make. Do you go and try and catch up there and then and risk losing your wicket and then costing your team that time you've batted for, or do you keep on batting and see where you can get and try and catch up later on? And I think he's sort of reaped the fruits of persevering, as Timal said, in the last couple of games against Pakistan, got 90 odd against Afghanistan as well, and obviously the big 100 today. But I think the interesting thing with this Australian team is they're almost winning these games in spite of themselves, if that makes any sense. I mean, if you look at the way England play the game and they go so hard up front, with that batting lineup that Australia have, the power, the aggression, they've chosen the way they want to play. But if you had Finch, Warner, Khawaja, Maxwell going as hard as they do at times in the T20 circuit, for example, from ball one, they can make a lot. They can make some huge scores. But they're backing themselves with the bowling attack they've got as well to do it this way. And they're winning games.
Yeah, they seem to play cricket in what and they've often been criticised, I think, for trying to win games like it's 2015. You know, this is sort of classically English way of trying to win games that you would have won 4 years ago by thinking that 250 is still a good score, or thinking now that 300 is still a good score. I wonder if we're going to see Australia start to go through the gears later in the tournament. That would be my concern.
I wouldn't be too concerned if I was an Australian fan. They've played 6, won 5, lost 1, and they're top of the group as it stands. So I'd probably...
Stop being so nice about the Aussies.
I know it's traditional to kind of bash the Aussies as an Englishman, but you can't argue with how they're sat in the group after the first round of games. They've played a game or two more than New Zealand, India and India, but... you'll be pretty pleased. I think we're picking holes a little bit, if I'm being totally
honest.
I'm doing
my best. Yeah. I did want to just mention as well, Shakib Ahsani. He didn't get many today, just 40 odd, but he's obviously had a great tournament, and he's kind of become this star for Bangladesh. You know, back to back hundreds against England and then the West Indies. He's bowling at difficult times of the innings. He's batting at number three. I mean, we've talked about him before as one of the best all-rounders in world cricket. He's certainly having that sort of tournament, isn't he?
It's been really nice sort of to see him entering the mainstream, if that makes sense. He's been the world's best all-rounder for 5-6 years. And there's this weird surprise when he does it. And even when he got his first, he got 70-odd in the first game when they beat South Africa. And even then it was sort of underplayed. But no, he's a fantastic player, and he's been a fantastic player for a very long time. And to see him doing what he's doing on this stage hopefully gives some permanence to, one of the greatest players of his generation.
I imagine this is no surprise to you.
No, I'd actually say it is, because normally, when you associate a gun all-rounder, they're batting at 5 or 6 normally. They're a genuine all-rounder. They'll bowl their turnovers and they'll bat at 5 or 6. You think Andrew Flintoff, you think these type of guys. But, you know, apart from Jack Callis, you wouldn't say there are many genuine all-rounders that also, you know, bat at 3. So I remember I was watching that first game, and when he came out at number 3, I was actually a little bit surprised, because normally I'm used to, you know, again, I've played against Shakib on 2020 circuits and things. He comes in at 5, 6, 7, as most all-rounders does. So I think it's obviously been a brilliant move from Bangladesh, whoever, you know, came up with it, to get him in at number 3, give him that responsibility, say, look, you're our best player, we need you to bat at number 3 and hopefully score us some hundreds. And he's definitely been doing that, hasn't he?
Yeah, they sit outside the top four. They're top of the bottom at the moment, in fifth place in the table. I don't know if we'll see them qualifying. It's starting to look like that top four have run away with it, and that does include England. We'll talk a bit more about them next.
This is Love Sport.
Obviously, Morgs came in and played an unbelievable hand. Some of the cleanest striking you'll get to see. And to be at the end was an absolute delight and pleasure to watch. So I'm really pleased for him, and really good time for him to hit some good form.
Yes, Joe Root had the best seat in the house as Owen Morgan smashed 148 off 71 balls, including 17 sixes, just 4 fours. Disappointing, that should have maybe found the boundary more times. But it was probably one of the best one-day innings by an Englishman in terms of sheer hitting. Tamal, he just seems to be hitting the same shot over and over again.
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? It was relentless. It was, you know, you'd say some average bowling, but also some brilliant batting. And you say he stuck to his strengths, didn't he? He's so brilliant. Some of the balls weren't even that short, but the speed at which he transferred his weight onto the back foot and just pulled them off length towards the leg side, it was brilliant. Especially you didn't know if Owen was going to play going into the game.
Yeah.
Obviously with the back spasms, it was it was outstanding to watch, and it was a real spectacle for the fans.
Yeah, I think his back's fine. I was kind of like, when he played, I was like, you just don't need to play this game. Like, Afghanistan are really poor. Like, there's plenty of depth in the squad. Maybe just take a day off. But clearly he felt fine. Nick, I know you're our sort of resident Afghanistan expert. We'll come on to their own problems a little later. But have you been really disappointed with the way they've played? If we talk about just the on-field issues,
they've been. It's been hard. They've played in conditions they've certainly not been used to. Mm. You know, the rain, the green decks, it's not been conducive to a sort of a fleeting, developing subcontinental side. But at the same time, they've some of the selections have been odd. They don't, also the way the batsmen play is not necessarily, you wouldn't call it percentage cricket. If you watch someone like Hazra Zazai, it's great to watch when it comes off, and it will come off at some point, whether it's this World Cup or the next. They will get a team for 350, 360, because they all play in the same way. The guys they need to get the runs, Ramat Shah bats at three. He's a proper player. Mm. Can bat for 50 overs. He'll get you 120 odds out. He's got a test match 98. He's the guy that you can sort of build around, and he's not got many runs. Nabi's sort of batted too low. Najibullah, who got 50 odd in the first game, was dropped for the third game. It's just been muddled, and it's not helped. And their strength is their bowling. But you can't give anyone 120 runs to defend on fairly flat surface with fairly short boundaries against world-class batsmen.
I also saw on Twitter today, Phil Simmons, the coach, has said that once this tournament's done, there's going to be some home truths aired. He's going to... Is his contract up after this tournament?
He knows his
time's done after this, and he said, look, we're going to concentrate on the World Cup now, but then when we're done, I'm going to let you know what I'm dealing with and what I've had to deal with behind the scenes from selectors and board members. So it's going to be interesting to watch Afghanistan cricket in the next few weeks.
It's a book I'll read, I'll tell you that. I mean, we might as well get into it, Nick, because I know you know a lot about this, and I know you've got some meetings lined up where you're probably going to get all the dirt in the next couple of days. Politics getting involved in Afghanistan cricket is not new, is it?
It's the patron-in-chief of the Afghan Cricket Board is the president of the country. He was there yesterday, or whenever it was. Was it yesterday?
Three days ago.
God, yeah, they've all merged into one.
I mean, that does happen in a six-week World Cup. It just feels like cricket all the time.
They are a perfect example of a developing cricketing nation who've sort of grown on the field faster than they have off the field. And you'd like to think this is a teething problem. They've just chosen a very bad month to sort of self-combust. I mean, everything from the captain being changed, Ashgar Afghan, who's sort of come back into the side in the last couple of games. And it's no coincidence they look a far better team for his presence than without it. There were times on, whenever it was, they played England, I've completely forgotten.
Yeah.
There were times in that game when he was clearly the man on the field making the decisions. And that's not surprising, because he's the reason they're there. He didn't play in the first few games of the qualifier last year. They lost those games. He came back into the side. They won those games. They got to the World Cup. He was promptly left out on the eve of the tournament. Rashid Khan and Mohammad Nabi, who are the two figureheads of this side, what they've done globally is enormous. And they both tweeted directly at the country's president to say, we don't agree with this, what's going on? The man that became the captain, Gulbuddin Naib, he's a funny kind of cricketer. He's a sort of guy that when you're coming up through that associate ladder, through the divisions, he's an athlete, he's a big man, he can hit it a long way, he can bowl you a few overs.
When you're playing Hong Kong, he can change games.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the guy that you want in your team, because he's an athlete. You can throw him in exactly at number six, or do what he did against England, and open the batting and clear his front leg and see how many he can get away. But he's not... He wouldn't be in my top 15 players in Afghanistan. He certainly wouldn't be in the top 15 of a lot of the couple of former coaches.
I mean, I think you gave him a pretty solid ranking in the World Cup overall earlier.
I think it was harsh. I mean, my point was, I think I described him as the least good of the players at the World Cup. And but I don't
mean he's the worst cricketer at the World Cup.
It's probably a bit strong, but my point being that he's sort of your fourth seamer, and he's a number eight batter, and I don't really know what he's there to do, and it has left them a position short where Afghan was left out of the side completely, whether that's political or to do with fitness, as was the official word, or was because they simply do not have a space given Naib's new role in this team. It's just complicated matters hugely, and they've become, it's been a bit, I don't want to say embarrassing, but it's been awkward because they are so much better than this.
Mm.
And to sort of have the month they've had, as Phil Simmons tweeted earlier today, I mean, it'll be a very interesting few weeks after the tournament ends, because there will be a lot that comes out, and they'll be looking for a new coach, probably an internal coach, because getting someone from abroad to come and live in Kabul and to try and run that from within is hard, because Kabul is Kabul. It's one of the most dangerous cities in the world. So they have a lot of challenges facing them. They can't let this happen again, because it's been such a great story for 20 years, and it's been a mess for the last month and a half.
Do you have any optimism that it will get better?
Yeah, I mean, they've got some phenomenal talent, and guys that aren't in the squad who might have been in the squad but who are certainly coming through. There's so much talent. There's Kikkal Zahir Khan, who played for Lancashire last year in the Blast. He's 18. Rashid Khan, Mujeeb have got so much time on their sides. Hazra Zazai will come again. He was dropped for the game against England. I said when I was here a couple of weeks ago, he was the guy to look out for at this World Cup, and I maintain if he played all nine games, he would take a team down.
Yeah.
He's got 230s, a 25 in good time, and I think he became sort of a cult figure quite quickly, but they've just not put the performances together. But yeah, this experience can only help them. They're a young team. They're a 20-year-old cricketing nation. It's mental what they've done in 20 years, and this is their second World Cup, and yeah, they'll grow. They'll come back. They'll come again.
You've obviously played Afghan Premier League. You know what depth there is. Do you have some optimism that this is by no means their best showing?
Yeah, I think, as you said, I played the Afghan Premier League last September, October, whenever it was, and it's strange. So obviously, I followed and played in the competition, but there's actually guys playing in this World Cup now that I don't actually recognise. And that might be a strange thing. There were standout players in the Afghan Premier League who aren't now in this World Cup squad, if that makes sense. Obviously, there's a difference between 2020 and 50 over cricket. I completely get that. But I think there's a little bit of, you know, jobs for the boys,
There's a really interesting dynamic in Afghan cricket, which is, it's sort of that almost club crickety thing where you've got, in Afghanistan's, their journey began in 2007, 2008, when the Division 5 bottom tier, they've beaten Jersey, they've beaten Argentina, they've beaten Vanuatu, they've beaten all sorts of weird and wonderful cricketing nations to get where they are now. And on that path, there have been guys who've been there throughout. And now that they're at the pinnacle, telling these guys they can't be part of it it sounds silly to say, because it's international sport and it shouldn't be jobs for the boys, but it's so hard.
Mm.
And we almost had this with England when Jofra Archer was in the round, the setup. There was the guy that, you know, the only people saying we're not sure about Archer were people who felt sorry for the guys who'd been there for 4 years. And if you multiply that by a million, you've got what Afghanistan are, from where they've come from to get to where they are. It's so hard to say to these guys, we're going to drop you for these new guys who've not done the journey that you've done, but they're better than you. So they're left in a sort of halfway house position.
Yeah, and there was one guy in the Afghan Premier League, left arm seamer, Shahid Shahzad, his name is, and you know, I kind of took him under my wing a little bit, you know, cause obviously being a fellow left arm pacer, and he was brilliant. He was one of the leading wicket takers in the Afghan Premier League. He was genuinely a good bowler. Brendan McCullum was our captain. You know, Baz chucked him the ball whenever, you know, we were in a bit of a tricky spot, and he finished the APL with, you know, he was one of, if not the leading wicket taker. Bowled good pace, kind of, you know, mid 80s, left arm seamer, swung it a little bit with a new ball. You think all the categories kind of to check. He's going to be a good international player, and you know, he's nowhere to be seen. Yeah. I think he's been in and around the squad a little bit, you know, the start of the year, but he's not obviously he's not here. And you know, Afghanistan looks like the type of team that could really use a left arm seamer that bowls 85 mile an hour. And
you look at Hamid Hassan, who's actually been quite impressive, but he hadn't been in around the ODI side for 2-3 years because he's getting on. He's been there for that entire journey. He was one of the old stages that people did think was done, and he's come back in here, you know, out the blue.
Mm. Well, I wasn't going to say that we would be moving from one failing team to another, but we are going to talk about South Africa after the break.
This is Love Sport.
24 minutes past seven. This is the Inside Edge on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine. Me, James Gray, fast bowler Tamal Mills, and the cricketer's Nick Friend. Yesterday, South Africa were beaten by New Zealand. It was their fourth defeat of the Cricket World Cup, and they are, I'm told mathematically by people who understand these things, not yet out of the World Cup. I think we can safely say they are all but out of the World Cup after posting just 241 from their rain-curtailed 49 overs, and New Zealand promptly chased them down. Kane Williamson, that man, with 100. And it kind of calls us to start the inquest into South African cricket that actually, to be honest, started 2.5 weeks ago. They were beaten by Bangladesh. They haven't looked particularly impressive at any point. I think, and I highlighted this earlier today on Love Sport, the thing that to me seems is just no evolution. You look back at that team that chased down 370 at Durban. I went through the list, and 7 of that team played in the game yesterday. 2 more were in the squad. Dale Steyn would be there were he not injured, and Riley Rousseau is no longer South African. So it's not as though they've improved, changed or evolved their team. What has gone wrong? Because that's a good group of cricketers. That is a good group of cricketers. Anyone.
It's hard. They're a team in flux, but they're also a sort of a wider group of cricketers in flux. I mean, they've not picked that squad because they're leaving a great group of players out. This is what they've got. Even Rassie van der Dusen, who's come in and done very well, he's 30. He's been around for a very long time. They don't necessarily have the guys that have come in, the youngsters that have come in. Lungi Ngidi is a very impressive bowler. Rabada didn't play in the World Cup 4 years ago, so he's part of this. He's very much, I mean, those two are very much the leaders of this new South African team with Quinton de Kock. But they're picking what they've got because that's what they've got, and that this is where they are.
Even when I look at those guys, you know, de Kock and Amla, Du Plessis, you know, they're talented cricketers.
It's a mixture. I think part of it is that. Don't want to say stale, but it's as you say, there's been no evolution. When there's no evolution, I think there's, and when you're not winning every week, and you're not changing, and you sort of know that that's what you've got, and I imagine it's quite hard to move forward. And at the same time, guys like Hashim Amla, we're not looking at the same players we were when he got 330 in England in 2012. I mean, this is a very different Hashim Amla, and the pressure that comes with playing for South Africa as well is, I think, probably more than we can understand. I'm sure Tim Arwood understand it better, but the pressures of playing international sport and then playing for a nation like South Africa, where you represent so much more than just going out there and playing cricket, is, yeah, you know, I think they're in a really tough position, each and every one of them, not helped by the fact that their key men are just not in great nick and carrying injuries. And
I mean, I just find it, well, Andy Zaltzman actually did a piece on the BBC today and pointed out some really weird stats and didn't offer any explanation for them, which is fine because I don't think you can. South Africa have done okay with the ball, but they've got 2 of the top 5 ranked ODI bowlers, Imran Tahir and Kagiso Rabada. They've got David Miller, who not that long ago was one of the more feared batsmen in white ball cricket. And in his first 100 balls, I think he hit 3 boundaries in this tournament. You know, are these guys just crippled by pressure? Is it as simple as that?
I'm not sure. I think, you know, obviously guys have bad games. You're not entitled, just because you're one of the world's best players, you are going to go through a difficult point at some point in your career. That's the nature of sport, isn't it? And unfortunately, I don't think these guys have had terrible tournaments. You know, Imran Tahir, Kagiso Rabada, you'd say they've had average tournaments so far, whereas South Africa are obviously a team that, if they were going to do well in this tournament, those guys were going to have to, you know, be up there with the leading wicket takers in the competition, unfortunately. So it's tough when you look at it like that. And I think it's right, Nick said, you know, that they're a product of what's going on in South Africa. They've had so many cricketers leave, you know, the country for different reasons, and, you know, to come and play Colpack in England, especially being the main one. I saw Tetenda Taibu, the captain of Zimbabwe, who's obviously kind of a legend of Zimbabwe cricket. Yeah. He was very public, and he stated that he thinks South Africa is going to go the way of Zimbabwe's cricket, and, you know, in the years to come, which would obviously be a huge shame, and hopefully it doesn't go that way. But yeah, you're right. On paper, there is talent there, but I always think that coming into this tournament, if South Africa were going to do well, they're 4, you know, de Kock, Du Plessis, and then Tahir and Rabada would have had to have a superb tournament with the bat and the ball. Unfortunately, you know, as happens in cricket, it hasn't gone that way.
No, exactly. And those stats about the batting don't get any better when you look at the whole. You know, I was mentioning that David Miller hit just 3 boundaries from his first 100 balls. Collectively, they've got the third lowest strike rate. Their team strike rate is 81. You know, they have had a bad tournament.
What's interesting with their batting is that they especially. I mean, we've not chucked in the loss of de Villiers yet, and that's massive, obviously. And
well, no, he offered to come back. But he said I can play the night before.
The interesting thing with the side they've been left with is that I've always looked at them and thought they're a batsman light in that team. Even having JP Duminy at six, who, to be honest, hasn't done much in ODI cricket for a long time, who feels like he's in that side because he bowls some part-time off-spin. But yeah. So does Aidan Markram. And they sort of started the tournament with Duminy playing and Miller not playing and Morris not playing. And they've since sort of worked it out. But they came into the tournament, given the loss of Steyn and De Villiers and Norcher, who was injured before the tournament started, didn't really know what their best team was. Hmm. They didn't really have a great... I still don't think they know the best balance of their team. I think they've now got the best 11 cricketers on the park. But because the fact that they've got, I think, Pellequai batting at 7 or 8, or 7, and Morris at 8, they are sort of a batsman light. So it must be, I imagine it's harder for the guys up front to go that hard, because if you find yourselves 3 down within 10 overs, as they have done in this tournament, you're fighting a losing battle straight away.
And I guess what, as people who watch England more than any other nation, inevitably, what we forget is we are blessed with having 8 all-rounders. And actually, to be fair, England worked this out a long time ago. 10 years ago, England worked out that you had to pick all-rounders. All right, they ended up picking sort of cricketers who couldn't necessarily bat or bowl, and that was their excuse for being an all-rounder, and I won't name names. But, you know, Jamie Dalrymple's got a lot of ODI caps, and also got me out once, which is why I've got a thing against him, but anyway.
Get that on the air, just drop that in.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, it wasn't even a good ball, it didn't turn. But, you know, that all-rounder and having 3 or 4 all-rounders and batting down to 9, you know, Jofra doesn't even get a single figure batting position, and you know, you'll tell me as well as anyone else, he can hit the ball a long way.
And he'll tell you more than I will. Let me tell you that.
I'll remember to ask him that. And I suppose you're right, South Africa there, much as they've got talented cricketers, the imbalance, and then it's that weak middle as well, isn't it?
They're essentially playing. The other thing we forget is that England have worked this out in the last 3 or 4 years. If we go back 4 years, South Africa are playing the cricket that England played at World Cups, and England played in one day cricket. They're trying to keep wickets in hand. They don't care what they're doing the first 30, 35 overs. And they're basically banking on a good last 10. And actually, they sort of did that yesterday. They're probably only about 10, 15 runs light.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean they're... Yeah, that doesn't mean they're...
Also, Quinton de Kock needs to learn out when someone's nicked it. Kane Williamson nicking it to him, and he just stands there going, oh no, he's missed it. But the problem there is that Imran Tahir is going mental, but that means absolutely nothing, because he goes mental every time the ball goes past the bat. I did feel sorry for them. Should have walked. No, I don't. Do you walk... Do you ever get the opportunity to walk?
I don't bat, so I'm not a walker, no.
No,
I don't. I mean, I'm a massive hypocrite, though, because then if somebody doesn't walk off my bowling, oh, yeah. I'll spit feathers, yeah. So. But no, I personally wouldn't walk the umpires there to do his job.
I think,
especially in modern cricket, you've got all the technology.
You've got a review up your sleeve. I mean, if you're playing in a way, you're the captain of a side at a World Cup, and South Africa have a spare review and nick it, and they don't use it.
I think if you've also, if you're known as someone who walks, you can then get teams to burn a review on you, but by sort of trying to double bluff them into reviewing.
I love. Did you see Steve Smith's review today?
And, oh, super! One of the greats.
The low full toss, hitting thudded on the front pad, going on to hit middle and middle. We thought, we'll have a look. Though.
I think he might have dropped Shane Watson a text before exactly. That one. It wasn't a good review.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Inside Edge on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine. Australia thrashed Bangladesh at Trent Bridge earlier today to continue their good form and take their place at the top of the table with 10 points, 5 wins. They made a circumspect start to their innings but kept wickets in hand, and Dave Warner at the crease, he made 166 of 147 balls just minutes after I criticised his lack of form. Aaron Finch and Usman Khawaja also made half centuries. Australia posted 381 for 5, which is always likely to be too much for Bangladesh, who ended up 48 runs short despite a fine 100 from wicketkeeper Mushfiqur Rahim. Let's hear what man of the match Warner had to say after his third career Cricket World Cup century.
You're always open to whatever presents itself out there. You've got to adapt, you know, to the conditions, and as I said, it's about momentum. So if you get off to a flyer, it's about assessing, one, how many wickets you lost, and then two, you know, how you want to play it through the middle overs. But so far, things are working well.
England could join them on 10 points when they head to Headingley tomorrow. They've captain Owen Morgan's in fine form as well. He hit a world record 17 sixes in a destructive innings of 148 against Afghanistan to leave his teammates, including Test captain Joe Root at the other end, astounded. England fell just 3 short of 400, and Root had the best seat in the house for much of Morgan's hitting.
Obviously, Morgs came in and played an unbelievable hand. Some of the cleanest striking you'll get to see. And to be at the end was an absolute delight and pleasure to watch. So I'm really pleased for him, and really good time for him to hit some good form.
Route England and Sri Lanka will kick off at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Don't miss our Cricket World Cup show with Jamal Mills tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. All the latest news from the toss, the teams and much, much more. This is the Inside Edge on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine every Thursday night until 8 p.m. With me, James Gray. Tonight, the cricketer's Nick Friend and, as I mentioned, the fastest man in Sussex when Jofra Archer's not in the county, Jamal Mills. Now, we were talking about Owen Morgan earlier and his fabulous hitting. And I said it off air, there used to be a sort of set piece of how you bowled to Owen Morgan and stopped him scoring runs. You had two backward points, you stopped him playing the cut shot, you didn't give him any width. He was kind of solved, wasn't he, Tamal?
Potentially, yeah. I think Morgs obviously has had a lot of issues, or he's gone through a lot of different batting techniques over the course of his England career. I remember seeing something on during one of the games where they saw the evolution of the big duck and, you know, the big kind of crouch he did before
he used
the
to have
crease
that weird
and
pre-ball sort of squeeze
he
thing.
Did, yeah.
Very strange.
So he's obviously gone through quite a few technical bits that maybe hampered him a little bit in terms of the shots he could play and the areas he could hit. He's obviously a very good player of spin, which helps. The way he sweeps and reverse sweeps is excellent.
What would your plan be to him if I gave you the new ball and said, right, we've got England two down and Owen Morgan's coming in? Where would you bowl to him?
Well, I'm probably bumping most batsmen in the world because it's my go-to ball. Whatever I do, it's where I've kind of made my money over the last few years. But I'm more of the opinion as a bowler of sticking to my strengths. So I know I don't change too much depending on who I'm bowling at. Maybe right wrongly sometimes, bit pig ignorant maybe, but.
But you're not favouring, you're not going, well, he's very good square of the wicket, so I'm not going to try. You don't give anyone width, right?
Yeah, you don't. Width is never a good ball. It's short and wide outside the off stump is never a good ball. Obviously, it will get you wickets, as we know, but it's never a good ball to bowl short and wide. It's one of those ones. You bowl a short, wide one and it gets smacked out to deep cover and you think, the commentators give you all the plaudits for setting a trap and stuff. And it's not. You're not banging it in short and wide with the intention of getting hit out to deep cover. But
Well, next time you take a wicket caught deep point, I will quote that back to you. Mills, rubbish. This lad, what's he bowling short and wide for? Awful. Chris Gayle should have bowled full at him. England overall, though, in a pretty good place, coming up to the business end of the tournament. Obviously, got Sri Lanka tomorrow, but then it gets quite serious, and they've got some quite serious opponents, and they will be hoping to get Jason Roy back fit. We've seen him training with a bat in his hand, and Moeen Ali was talking the other day, gave a little insight into quite how fit he is.
He's doing really well, I think. Speaking to him, he's obviously desperate to come get himself ready and play, and hopefully we'll see him very soon. But the team's as always, we're in great shape in terms of atmosphere around, and everyone's looking forward to it. We're not, even if we have some big injuries and stuff, we've got players who are not playing well, so very good. So the environment's amazing, like it always is, and we're trying to be as professional as we can in our games, and we've played really well so far.
And of course, this hamstring injury to Jason Roy has given James Vince an opportunity to play for England. Of course, he's been so short of those in the last 5 years. He's obviously been in and out of the team a lot. Didn't cash in against Afghanistan when almost everyone else did. Nick, is James Vince still the answer if one of our openers is injured? Or actually, would you rather see Joe Root up there?
I wouldn't move Root, because I think Root is as destructive as the rest of these guys are. If Joe Root bats 50 overs, generally England get to somewhere around where they want to be. And I'd be keeping him at three because that's worked for the last 4 years. I really like James Vince, and I've always felt he's a big score away from cracking it. And I know that's
I know you can't keep on saying that, 500s away from really making progress.
My worry with Vince is that I can't remember ever seeing him scratching as he looked against Afghanistan. Actually, I thought that was the least fluent he's looked for England. Normally the criticism is that he gets a lovely 30. He was sort of planting his front foot and pulling, and eventually Afghanistan worked out if they got that short ball a bit higher, it just becomes even harder to pull off the front foot. And that's how they got him. And I guess as England faced quicker attacks as the tournament goes on, that's not necessarily a weakness you want to be showing, because Mitchell Starc, Jasprit Bumrah, these guys will run up and bang it in, and he'll face that same issue. But at the same time, if you don't go Vince... and you pull Roy out of the tournament, obviously they've announced that Hales is not available. Where do you go? Do you really want to go with someone that you've not had in that position the last 4 years.
I mean, Root did open the other day and it went all right.
He did, but would you want to change him? I mean, would you want to take him away from there? And if you do take him away from there, who then bats at three? Which becomes, I mean, Chris Wokes presumably is not their long term answer at three. So
why not? Well, I mean, I'm sort of joking, but also like no one else has played well at three for England outside of Root.
So don't move Root.
Right, okay, fine. I can see I'm not getting anywhere with this. Vince, is he a guy that really scares you as a bowler?
Yeah, especially in T20s. Obviously, I don't play 50-over cricket anymore, but I play a lot against James Vince. I have done. Obviously, started my career at Essex and then at Sussex. So I've, you know, being in the South Group, I'll play against Vince twice a year, often in T20s. Our first blast game this year is against Hampshire at their place. And Vince, he's the guy you want to get early. I think what makes him really good, especially in T20 cricket, is he scores boundaries. He scores a lot of fours. Mm-hmm. He hits controlled shots along the ground. You know, hits obviously brilliantly through cover. You know, he plays pretty low risk cricket, but still aggressive cricket. Mm. And you know, as Nick said, he's not far away from scoring some of these runs that he scored countless of in county cricket. He's got county championship double hundreds. You know, domestic. You know, list A, plenty of hundreds. He's a class player, and I think. I don't know what it is, maybe if it's a little bit mental or things like when you go up to that next level or it's just the consistency. The bowlers are, you know, you're getting less bad balls in international cricket than you are in domestic cricket. But, you know, he's a class player and you know, I'd probably still say he is, you know, deserving of that next man in role that he's got for England at the moment.
And being the next opener off the rank helps because realistically with Hales unavailable, as we said, I mean, how many other options are there? Off the top of my head, I couldn't necessarily name any.
Vince is in an interesting position as well because England have had a lot of guys open the batting, especially in test cricket in the last few years. And I think what has stood Vince out and the reason he's stuck around is because he doesn't look out of place when he's out there. There have been guys who've looked, you know, one step short of that sort of test match international quality. But James Vince looks the part. Mm. And, you know, yes, we know his weakness and he nicks off a lot and he gets caught behind the wicket a lot, but there is so much talent there. And I don't think England would persist with him as much as they have done in both Test cricket at number three and in One Day cricket at the top of the order if they didn't really think there was something there. And as much as it may well be a mental thing, that can only give him confidence that he is in and around this side. But at the same time, of course, if you're only getting a gig because someone else is hurt, you know you've got one game, two games at a time. It can't be easy because you're going in there knowing I've got to get myself 140, 150 here to even keep myself in the side for the next one.
But I often wonder if pressure like that sort of, you reach a terminal velocity of pressure that you're playing for England in a World Cup. Like, there's only so much pressure you can feel. Everything above that, oh, I probably should get 100 so I can keep in the side. Oh, I'm playing at my home ground. There becomes a certain point where you're under pressure. You've got to perform when it comes to international cricket. And actually, it's a good point, and I hadn't thought about it. You know, James Vince, in some cricketing circles, becomes a running joke because he is a guy who's had so many opportunities. And you don't want him to be, you know, a Graham Hick. Although, if he gets as many first-class runs as Graham Hick, then who knows, maybe he will be happy. But it's the fact that he's been seen as a solution to a lot of different problems. And I sort of want him to be his own cricketer and say, I am what I am. I'm not Michael Vaughan, even though occasionally I might not look like him. Because, as you say, you know, people respect the way he bats. And in T20 cricket especially, maybe that's what he needs to do. Maybe he needs to say, look, I'm going to be a guaranteed starter of the England T20 side as an opener. If you don't pick me in ODI cricket, fine. But that's going to be something I can do. We have to move on. We're going to talk a little bit of India next.
This is Love Sport.
14 minutes to 8 here on the Inside Edge with the Cricketer magazine here on Love Sport. Tamal Mills, Nick Friend and myself, James Gray, in the studio. Now, of all the big teams that we've talked about, we haven't really talked about a team that many would have as the favourites, if not England, and that's India. They are 3 wins from their 4 games. They have, of course, played one fewer than everyone else because they were given the leisure of a week off because the ICC like giving India what they ask for. But Shikhar Dhawan's going to have a couple of weeks off. He's out of the World Cup with a hairline fracture to his thumb, and he's been replaced by Rishabh Pant, which is not a like-for-like replacement. He's a wicketkeeper batsman, of course, but I know many India fans would have had Pant in the squad to begin with, Tamal.
Yeah, I would have. He's a box office cricketer. Shikhar Dhawan's been in really good form. He's been in really good form for India for many years now. He's been one of the more dependable guys at the top of the order, but if India need any more, but I don't know if they do, but Rishabh Pant, he's really, really a brilliant and exciting young batter. He plays with
to say he plays with no fears, probably understating him a bit. He literally does not care. He'll play all the shots in the book. He'll be down on one knee. He'll be on his backside playing a shot. He'll be scooping them around. He'll be hitting them 10, 15 rows back. In the IPL this year, he was outstanding. He was every time, you know, I wanted to watch a Delhi Capitals game. Almost calling them Delhi Daredevils. Change of branding. I wanted to watch a Delhi Capitals game when they were batting. If I'm not doing anything on, oh, I know Delhi are batting late, so I want to tune in, because if Pant gets going, he scores, you know, 60 off 22 balls, and, you know, those type of innings where it's really exciting. He's obviously, with the nature of this Indian side, he's had a limited amount of opportunity. I played against him, I think, actually, on his international debut in Bangalore. This was a couple of years ago, and I don't think he's played an awful lot since. Obviously, with the nature of that Indian side, they're obviously blessed with many, many batsmen. So it'll be awesome to see if he gets an opportunity and shows the world what he can do.
Do you think that's kind of what India are missing? If India are missing anything, and it's hard to think that they are, maybe a little bit of an X-factor batter who can do that, someone who can just change a game in five overs?
I think his fearlessness. I mean, they've got a lot of X factor in there, but someone that's completely fearless and has got a test 150 in England, he knows he can do it. And I mean, frankly, even without that test 100, I think he'd be fairly confident in himself. The way he took that Delhi team, it was sort of quite an unfashionable, to an extent, young side, and dragged them to the playoffs. And he was so impressive, and he hits it a long way, and he's got all the shots, and he'll use all those shots. He'll play all of them. Like, he, as I say, he backs himself. And
so are we going to see him play at all?
I think so, because I imagine he'll batter. Rahul's an opening batter, so yeah. I don't think it's that. Dhawan's got a great ICC tournament record, but as a loss beyond that, I mean, Rahul moves up to his natural position as an opener, and that number four, they're so fluid in that middle order anyway, because if they start well, then Dhoni moves around and Kohli moves around, and Vijay Shankar would be the next man in, but I think he got hit in the toe today by Bumrah. I think they said he's fine, but
That's just mean. I mean, I just there's some guys I wouldn't bat against in nets. I think Jasprit Bumrah is one of them, partly because of that run-up. I call it a run-up, very generous term for a run-up. But it's when you hear of, like, batsmen getting injured by other bowlers. I'm just like, well, maybe, Jasprit, you shouldn't be bowling at your best batsman in nets. It's not fair.
Wait, so you say they should bowl at worst batsmen?
Yes, I think
that doesn't make any sense.
Just go and bowl at some club cricketers. If you have to go and hurt some batsmen somehow, go and bowl at some club cricketers who don't matter
much.
You got Graham Swann once.
I don't care. I think it annoys me when, like, I have the same thing at Sussex. You'll have some of the boys saying, no, I'm not, you know, I'll have someone else. And then I'm stood there bowling at a cone on my own, which obviously I understand. You've got to look after yourself, but, you know, that's not how it works in international cricket. You don't rock up and say, no, I'm not facing Bumrah, or I'm not facing Archer, or I'm not facing Stark. That's not the way it works. Like, you rock up at training, the coach will put the rotor on the board, and you get on with it, you crack on.
And you bump people in nets if you want.
Yeah, well, if they hit me, then yeah.
All right, I'll note that. Never hit Tamal Mills very far in nets. But this India batting lineup, obviously, they've lost Shikhar Dhawan, so Rahul's going to move up and open. Yeah, Pant might come in.
I think Pant just comes in and does what he does. I mean, presumably he's not the sort of guy you'd sit down and give a great game plan to, because he's just so talented. I think you just tell him to
get out. I mean, is there anyone in that India batting lineup who you really tell what to do? You certainly don't tell Virat Kohli what to do. Why would you bother telling MS Dhoni what to do? And the way Rohit Sharma's batting at the moment, don't say anything to him, because that's really been the breakout performer of the tournament.
Well, the interesting thing with this India team is they're so... I mean, and actually where Pant becomes quite interesting is that there's not been a huge amount of... we talk about South Africa as being stale, but the other side of the coin is when you've got a winning formula, you don't need to change it. And they've not had many guys sort of come into their side as Pant may well do. And I think the biggest challenge for him will be coming into a team that's sort of been populated by Dhawan for so long. And it'll be an interesting challenge for him. But Sharma's similar to Shakib, and he's been a world-class cricketer for years. He's got three ODI double tons.
Just the three.
It's a fairly mental record. But as you say, he flies under the radar.
Just the 24 ODI hundreds, and somehow don't actually talk about him that much. But I suppose because of Kohli, because of Dhoni, and because of Shikhar Dhawan's fine form. But he's not someone you'd want to bowl at, ever, really. I mean, when Josh Butler, when Owen Morgan broke the sixes record, Sharma was one of the guys who he went past, along with Chris Gayle. And yeah, for some reason, I don't know why, we don't talk about him in that sort of god tier of opening batsmen.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? And as you say, he holds a lot of the records, and he scores these tons. He scored, I think, three international T20 hundreds as well. So
four. Hate to correct you, but it's four.
Sorry.
It's right.
Four.
It's embarrassing.
Well, there you go. It's even better. So
even you underrate him.
So he just does it consistently, doesn't he? The top of the order. But I suppose because he isn't the off the field, you know, the marketable, the showpiece that Virat Kohli, MS yeah. Dhoni is. He's not quite that kind of, you know, that celebrity off the field, maybe. So
he hasn't got that advert for Clear Skin.
Exactly.
Have you seen that?
It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It's brilliant. If anyone's listening at home, look, Rishabh Pant and Virat Kohli doing the song and the dance advertising the face wash. It is up there with some of the best things.
It's also deserves to be left out of the original 15 for that alone.
They would have got paid a lot of money.
Particularly
for that,
weird because, as I believe most Indian adverts are, it's sort of half in English, half in Hindi. So yeah. It just comes. It's very strange, very very strange indeed. But it's not why Rishabh Pant got. Well, it might have been. I don't know. This India team. Do you think they are favourites now? Like now that we've seen everyone 4 or 5 games in, have they overtaken England? Are they level with England in that sense?
I'd say they're probably in and around level. I think the way England performed the other day, obviously, you know, give everybody a little bit more, I don't want to say hope, but reignited that passion maybe. But yeah, India have been very impressive. I think the guy, Pant, just looking at their team from the last game, you know, Shankar played pretty well. He's obviously a more than handy bowler, so you probably look at Kedar Jadhav as the guy that's probably going to miss out for Rishabh Pant, in my opinion. He's been a mainstay for India for a while, but he hasn't really performed lately. He's been injured a lot, and he bowls these weird bolt. It's something that you'd see on a Sunday green, just scrolling through a village, but somehow it's taking wickets in international cricket. It's quite bizarre. But yeah, I think India have been really impressive. Hardik Pandya is X factor with the bat in terms of the cameos at the end, and then he's kind of your sixth, you know, your handy bowler.
Bits and pieces.
And then the wrist spinners, Chahal and Kuldeep. They were, you know, when they're on, Kuldeep had a terrible time in the IPL. He got dropped by his team in the end. Which is unheard of, but it's been really good to see him come back, and Chahal's, you know, he's up there with one of the leading wrist spinners of the world. So you've got those guys back in Jasprit Bumrah, and obviously all the firepower they've got with the bat, they look pretty formidable.
It's hard to see a weakness. I mean, you know, we sometimes try and look for weaknesses in teams where there aren't any. I would struggle to do it with the India team. And similarly with England, of course, they take on Sri Lanka at Headingley tomorrow. Do we fear Sri Lanka at all? When we did the first Inside Edge with Sam Morshead, of course, the digital editor at the Cricketer, he was very, very forceful in his view that Sri Lanka are the worst team of this tournament. I think Afghanistan have done something to maybe challenge that, but do they carry any sort of threat, Nick?
What I'd say in Sam's defence, they've picked a very weird squad. They've left guys out who, despite not perhaps having performed in recent times, thinking guys like Chandimal, they certainly come with more pedigree than some of the guys, some of the bits and pieces cricketers that have been picked ahead of them. Someone like Sirwardana, who'd been out of the setup for a while, Van der Sey, who's a leg spinner who'd been out of the fold for a while as well. They carry a threat. They carry the threat that Australia found for the first 25 overs of their reply. I mean, Kusal Pereira, as he did South Africa in that Test match, one of the great Test match chases. I mean, he's an extraordinary cricketer, and he's predominantly a one day man who had his day out in that Test match. But if he gets going and keeps going, he's a threat. Karuna Ratne, until this tournament, had a really woeful one day ODI record. He's improved. He's a good player. He's captaining.
He's also, there's a curious quote, which is, if we don't have pace, we have to think out the box. That's what we did the last few days. What we have to do with England's batsmen. We've got a couple of ideas. I mean, I don't know how many surprises you can spring in a World Cup. We know they're probably going to open with spin. Anyone got any guesses what Sri Lanka are going to do?
Oh, who knows? They might have a guy that normally bowls right arm medium pace, bowl a bit of left arm spin or something. You never know.
I mean, the interesting one, I don't know when the last we bowled was, but when they've had a bit of success against England's top order in the past, when Angelo Matthews opened the bowling with the keeper up. I know his body's shot and he's hardly got a run this tournament, but he's another one who's a very good cricketer and is a threat, because England have bad memories of him at the World T20. I think England still got over the line, but in 2016 he got sort of a very quick 70 to take them close, and he's got runs in England against England before in ODI cricket, and obviously you've got Lasith Malinga as well. That certainly wouldn't be a shock to England if Malinga ran up and ran through him with his slow balls and his Yorkers, but he'll always be a threat because of what he does, and I guess if you don't face it regularly, it's probably quite weird.
I hope England come through, and I think we expect that they will. And there are a couple of other games this week. I just want to touch briefly on New Zealand versus the West Indies, because, you know, I watched New Zealand the other day and I sort of think that we might have forgotten to talk about them, because for a start, I have never enjoyed watching boundary fielding as much as I enjoyed watching New Zealand. Tamal, do you think that they're coming under the radar a little bit?
I tipped them as one of my teams to potentially win the World Cup.
Not under your radar.
I'd like to just give myself a little pat on the back for the way they've started.
Very good,
Thank you very much.
I mean, they haven't won anything yet.
But they're going all right. Obviously, they had the game rained off against India, which is obviously really good for them in terms of getting a point against, you know, obviously one of, if not the best team. That obviously helps you out. But they're five games in, 1-4, drawn one. I think their bowling has been really impressive. Lachie Ferguson bowling 90 miles an hour plus, well supported by Matt Henry, Trent Bolt and the like. And then Kane Williamson, as he always is just Mr. Consistency. He just plods along. If he needs to accelerate, he will. If not, he'll just hold the side together. And he's a top bloke to go with that. He's one of those blokes you hate because he just doesn't seem to be bad at anything. So,
And he always gets runs. That's all we've got time for on the Inside Edge today. Tamal will be back 10 a.m. tomorrow morning with a Cricket World Cup show. Don't miss it. We'll be back next week at 7.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.